With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Bree Ripley. A small airplane on a training flight this afternoon landed safely on an interstate highway in Montana after experiencing a mechanical problem. The plane was forced to make an emergency landing when a throttle cable broke during the flight from Helena. Officials say the pilot got the attention of a semi-truck driver by flying directly above the vehicle traveling along Interstate 15, about 25 miles north of Helena. The truck slowed down, allowing the plane to land in front of it. The two people on the airplane were not hurt. Details about the plane, pilot, and passenger were not immediately available. Yellowstone National Park is taking action against up to a dozen employees after an investigation found some female workers were subjected to sexual harassment and other problems. Superintendent Dan Wang says some of the employees could be fired, while others could receive suspensions or counseling. He says some of the employees cited in the investigation are already retired.
Tell me an organization that has, you know, almost 1,000 employees, and find me one that doesn't have issues about workplace issues. Find me one. Yeah. I don't think you will. Doesn't mean we shouldn't improve it.
The move comes as widespread reports of harassment, bullying, and other misconducts have tarnished the image of the National Park Service and its parent agency, the U.S. Interior Department. Federal investigators found problems at many of the nation's most popular parks, including Yellowstone, Yosemite, Glacier, and the Grand Canyon. Wang says the actions against Yellowstone employees could start as early as August, but he wouldn't give any more details, citing privacy. A report released this spring by the Office of Inspector General says women within the park's maintenance division were subjected to sexist and racist remarks from some male employees.
Did the OIG report show us that we have some things to work on? Absolutely. And we are, and we want to make sure that we're fully aware of what's happening throughout all of Yellowstone National Park, just not the one work unit that was singled out in that report.
Wank says the park will host focus groups next week to see if a culture of sexual harassment extends to other divisions. Montana faces twin threats this summer. On land, crews are battling some of the biggest and most destructive fires in the country. In the water, officials are staving off the spread of invasive mussels that could cause millions of dollars of damage to hydropower dams and irrigation lines. Montana Public Radio's Nikki Ouellette reports.
These threats come together for wildland firefighters, who often use equipment that travels across the country and has the potential to carry invasive hitchhikers with it. But firefighters are tackling the potential contamination head on.
I'll fire the pump up for you.
It's right around sunset on the tarmac at the Jet Center in Kalispell. Wyatt Frampton, a fire manager for the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, fires up a heated pressure washer. Above him towers a tank-like airplane shaped like a boat with wings. The CL-215, more commonly called a super scooper, is on loan from Saskatchewan. Earlier today, it was fighting the Bridge Coulee Fire, part of the Lodgepole Complex, on the east side of the Continental Divide.
And so now it's returned back to Kalispell. And so what we're going to do now is, as the mechanics check the plane out, we're going to use our heated pressure washer to clean the tank.
A pair of mechanics spray the inside of the plane's two 600-gallon tanks and then get to work on the outside.
Moving our way to the front of the boat.
It only takes 5 to 10 seconds of exposure to water heated to 140 degrees to kill most invasive hitchhikers, like quagga and zebra mussels, and within 20 minutes, the whole plane is deemed decontaminated.
And that is how you clean a super scooper.
Decontaminations usually happen after planes are grounded for the evening, and a tanker would never interrupt active firefighting to get hosed down. Instead, decontamination of planes, engines, tankers, and hoses has become part of regular maintenance and upkeep, and it's required any time equipment crosses the Continental Divide. Frampton says the DNRC has also purchased a second or even third set of some gear, like helicopter buckets, so crews can swap them out on the fly and not double dip into different water bodies.
And given what's at stake from the potential spread of aquatic invasives into the ecosystem here, prevention is a small price to pay for potential consequences.
Dan Vermillion, a commissioner for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, agrees. He says a mussel infestation in Montana's waterways would not only damage the state's economy, agriculture, and water-based ecosystems, but also something much less tangible, but just as vital.
They're kind of the veins and blood vessels of Montana that keep us moving and they keep us growing and they keep us healthy. And so when you have an invasive species that can come in and really upset that balance, I think people do feel it kind of, feel it very personally. It's not an abstract thing. It's something that they feel and they fear and they're concerned about.
Firefighters in Montana aren't the only ones taking steps to prevent spreading invasive species. This January, the National Wildfire Coordinating Group released a guide that covers best practices for decontaminating firefighting equipment for agencies across the country. Cynthia Tate, an aquatic ecologist for the U.S. Forest Service in Utah, wrote the guide.
And I thought, well, that's not going to be too hard, but it actually was very hard because there were no protocols that were based on science or on scientific research.
Until this year, fire managers had been cleaning their equipment, but protocols varied between agencies, and there was no way of telling how effective they were. For the past 10 years, Tate surveyed scientific studies and even ran some tests in a lab to make sure the protocols she came up with made sense for cleaning firefighting equipment. In one case, all the literature recommended using a certain chemical to kill invasive hitchhikers. But when she tested it on actual aviation equipment,
it failed the corrosion test for aluminum. So in our guidelines, we say absolutely no quat or bleach to be used on any aviation equipment or, you know, fuselages because of the safety issue.
While mussels were the impetus for creating the guide, it also outlines how to clean off other invasive species, viruses and parasites like hemorrhagic septicemia and whorling disease, and gross invasive algae like Didymo, commonly called rock snot.
The agency folks that I speak to, they don't want to be part of the problem. They don't want to be the vector that's going to be introducing quagga mussels.
Tate stresses these are just guidelines. Safety always comes first.
We've tried to make them as simple and as user-friendly and as efficient as we could so that we would avoid diverting their attention to this when they have, you know, really serious jobs to do.
Tate says she doesn't know of any examples of firefighting equipment transporting mussels, but it happens with weeds a lot, and the threat is enough for agencies to throw in a few thousand dollars for new equipment and training. I'm Nikki Ouellette, Montana Public Radio.
Federal charges have been filed in Nebraska against a man suspected of being the AK-47 bandit, who is accused of robbing banks in five states. Richard Gathercole from Roundup, Montana, is accused of interstate transportation of a stolen vehicle and stolen firearms in a complaint filed yesterday in federal court in Lincoln. FBI officials believe Gathercole is the AK-47 bandit, who's robbed banks in California, Idaho, Iowa, Nebraska, and Washington. Court documents say Gathercole was arrested June 20th near Lexington, Nebraska. A sheriff's deputy had spotted a pickup there that Kansas authorities had reported stolen by a man who fired at but missed a state trooper. A Nebraska prosecutor says state charges were dropped yesterday because of near duplication with the federal counts. The University of Wyoming hopes to have at least two new residence halls built or under construction by the year 2022 as part of a five-year housing plan. The Casper Star Tribune reports that the university's Board of Trustees approved the five-year plan last week and has allocated $300,000 to make two new halls a reality. In studies of facilities, the university has found its residence halls did not meet students' expectations, quote, putting the university at a competitive disadvantage with competitor institutions, unquote. The university houses 2,100 students across seven residence halls. It last built a dorm in 1967. It last had a broad housing and facilities plan in 2001. This is YPR News.